This is Seeking Delphi, episode number 26, the first of a three-part series on future driving, the interconnectivity of self-driving cars. I'm Mark Sackler. The future lives here. Hardly a day goes by without hearing something new about the development of autonomous vehicles. Just in the past few days, in fact, Waymo announced the imminent launch of a self-driving ride-sharing pilot program to be rolled out in the suburbs north of Phoenix. But this is just one initiative to be taken by one of many players entering the self-driving car market. Along with the myriad of questions about safety, regulation, liability, ethics, and public attitudes, comes a very basic question that has not much been addressed, at least publicly, until now. How will all these autonomous vehicles talk to each other? How will they be interconnected to provide maximum traffic control and safety benefits? One person very much focused on this issue is Alex Wiglinski. He's a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Worcester Polytechnic Institute and president of IEEE's Vehicular Technology Society. I spoke to him recently to get his take on the need for interconnectivity among self-driving cars. Alex, welcome to Seeking Delphi, and thanks for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. It's great being here.
Alex, before we dig into the subject at hand, the self-driving cars, to delve a little bit into your background, in addition to being an educator, you're very active in a number of initiatives with IEEE, but the one that's appropriate here is the Vehicular Technology Society, which you are president of. So tell us a little bit about that.
I'm really honored and I'm blessed to be part of such an active, dynamic group within the IEEE. So the IEEE Vehicular Technology Society, or IEEE VTS, it's an international community of about 4,600 members worldwide that focuses on various aspects of vehicle technology and systems. So we cover everything from like mobile radio communications, land transportation. The specific focus of the IEEE VTS is not only the creation and dissemination of theoretical knowledge, but also its applications. We're very applications driven. So things such as autonomous vehicles and self-driving cars are really very close to the core values, if you will, of our society. And so this is something of like significant interest to us.
Your primary interest is in the interconnectivity issues with self-driving cars, and we'll get into that in a second, but maybe you could recount for our listeners the whole hierarchy of the five levels of self-driving cars, where we are now, and then after that, we'll get into the issues with interconnectivity and how that'll help advance the whole
Sure. That's a great question, Mark. So there are five levels of self-driving cars, defined by the SAE, Society of Automotive Engineers. So they range from, there's actually six, but five count as various levels of autonomy. The level zero means zero automation, right? It's just like you hop into a car and everything is manually done by a human driver. The five levels of autonomy are like level one is driver assistance. So really what ends up happening there is the human driver is assisted by let's say one or more technologies with respect to the operation of the vehicle. So things like cruise control would be one of those systems, or maybe power steering or anything of that nature. Then there's level two, which is labeled as a partial automation, which actually takes it a little bit further in terms of the ability for the vehicle and its systems to support the actual driving of the human driver by like combining things like, let's say, steering and maybe acceleration and deceleration. Level three is called conditional automation. That's where the vehicle is actually is driving on its own, but it will respond to like, let's say if a human a human reacts, a human driver reacts, would actually participate, would jump in and take over control at a moment's notice. So there's still a steering wheel. The car can drive autonomously. And this is kind of a tricky level because it's unclear what operations and at what time autonomy will engage or disengage, and when the human driver will actually engage and disengage. So that's actually a really tricky level and is kind of like a challenging area where a lot of auto manufacturers kind of are bypassing. They either are going to play at level 2 or below, or level 4 and above. Level 4 is like high automation. There is essentially the vehicle itself will be able to drive on its own with minimal intervention from the human itself. And even like, you know, if there's several inputs by the human driver, the vehicle itself might potentially override in the name of safety. And then level 5 is like full automation. That's essentially the vehicle itself will control itself and drive itself in all conditions without any intervention from a human driver. So that's like the equivalent of like you know, sawing off the steering wheel of your vehicle and let the car take control of the entire situation. So like what I mentioned just a few seconds ago, in terms of the current state of the art, we already have vehicles on the road commercially that go up to level 2. You might see this in several products where there's like, you know, automatic parking, lane changing notification, emergency stopping and braking to avoid collisions and other similar technologies. And you know, as well as things such as automatic cruise control, where adaptive cruise control, where the vehicle itself will go with the flow of the traffic and adjust its cruise control based on the flow of the vehicle, the speed of the vehicle ahead of it, and maybe also behind it as well. So those are the 5 levels of automation. And as I mentioned, level 3 is the trickiest of them all because it's not really clear when the car will give up control and when a human needs to jump in. And this is very tricky because you don't know when, you know, the humans say, okay, car, take it away, or vice versa. The car is like saying, I can't do this anymore. There's just too much snow. Human driver, take over. And then that human driver will need to react in a very short period of time in order to take control of the vehicle in order to drive it safely. So that sort of summarizes those 5 levels of automation.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but level 3 to me sounds like what was going on in Arizona a few weeks ago with that Uber test vehicle that had the fatal collision with a bicycle rider.
Yep. Yeah, and in general, like a lot of auto manufacturers, you're hearing they're forfeiting. Forfeiting is a strong word, but they're sort of bypassing level 3 to go straight to 4 and 5 because that ability of a vehicle to know when to take over from a human and vice versa is really challenging. You know, in order to like the technology, it might take a few more years in order for the technology to mature to a point where human and car can interact with each other to that level where they can sort of tag each other in order to transfer control of that system. That's why a lot of manufacturers are actually going to 4 and 5 because it's a lot easier. There's no sort of like assumptions, if you will, of when the human is supposed to take over and when the self-driving car is supposed to take over. It's very clearly defined. Levels 1 and 2, humans mostly in control, but there are several self-driving or autonomous features that'll enable the vehicle to sort of assist, if you will, the human driver. And then levels 4 and 5 is just the exact opposite. The majority of the functions and operations are with the self-driving car, and the human is either in some small role or no role at all involved in its operation.
Okay, well, let's talk about getting to 4 and 5. And of course, one of your key areas is the whole issue of interconnectivity. And it's quite timely because just a couple of weeks ago, Ford put out a letter to the industry calling for some kind of common language protocol, whatever, so that all these different manufacturers of self-driving cars can communicate with each other. So talk to us about the importance of this issue and how it's going to have to play in to getting us to levels 4 and 5.
Like I would love to. This is fantastic news on with respect to Ford announcing this. So my opinion about autonomy and the future of self-driving cars is up until this point, a lot of effort has been put into making self-driving cars operate safely and reliably based on what they sense on their own, right? So each vehicle is on its own. It senses the environment. It sees every other vehicle, the fire hydrant, the stop sign, the dog, the pedestrian, and it makes actions based on what it perceives of the world around it. The issue with that is its perception is relatively limited. If you use LiDAR, if you use vision systems, if you use radar, it really kind of extends as far as the first object that it intercepts, and it can't go really past that. We call this like line of sight in the wireless world, where you can only see as far as, let's say, the first obstruction and then not past that. And that could potentially be very limiting, especially in situations with self-driving cars where above everything else, situational awareness of your driving environment is key. You know, when you and I drive on the road, when we drive, we want to have as much situational awareness of the driving conditions around us as much as possible in order for us to make safe and accurate decisions that could affect both our safety as well as the safety around us. So for instance, if I'm driving on the road, I don't pay attention just to the car ahead of me. I usually want to see what are the driving conditions, not of the vehicle ahead of me, but also the cars ahead of it. So for instance, if I'm driving on an interstate and I'm going, you know, at the speed limit, and you know, let's say that's pretty fast. Let's say it's 70 miles per hour, and the car ahead of me is going 70 miles per hour. I would like to know if that vehicle will suddenly do an emergency stop because the vehicle ahead of it is doing an emergency stop because the vehicle ahead of it is doing an emergency stop because it's about to collide with a deer or something. Which obviously, in you know, New England, there's no shortage of deer here. As a result, these systems on their own don't work so well. That LiDAR is not going to see the deer three or four cars ahead. It's just going to see the car ahead, and then it's got to react as quickly as possible, and then physics takes over. With wireless connectivity, this is going to be the game changer for the future of self-driving cars. It's almost like that sixth sense that, in part, we have as drivers, but then some. Imagine, if you will, now we're all driving on the road, and we have this telepathic ability to communicate with the drivers around us within a mile radius. That would be phenomenal. Imagine if all my intentions on how I want to drive are communicated to the drivers around me and their intentions are communicated back to me. The ability to sort of misunderstand what the driver's intention of a car in front of me, to the side of me, or several cars ahead of me are now no longer a mystery. And I can actually be able to take that and count in my decisions, making for a much safer environment. In terms of autonomous vehicles and self-driving cars, this is going to be, as I mentioned before, the game changer, because now all these vehicles are interoperating with each other in the sense of, like, they're not telling what each other vehicle should do, but at the very least, we'll be communicating, these are my intentions. And if you can map that out, even a few seconds in advance, this would allow for safe maneuvering in operations such as lane changing, which remarkably is a very dangerous operation if you do it on a highway and all the traffic is going 70, 75 miles per hour. In terms of what Ford brought up, this is absolutely critical for the next step in terms of connecting all these self-driving cars. So up until now, self-driving cars are kind of moving along. They might or might not be communicating with each other. And if they are communicating with each other, it's probably done so through some sort of proprietary language or scheme that is only accessible between vendors of that same vehicle, right? What Ford is proposing is essentially a lingua franca, a common language that would support vehicles, self-driving, perhaps produced by different vendors, by different manufacturers, to be able to interoperate with each other in order to facilitate them driving safely on the road. So it's almost like every car on the road will have the same dictionary communicating with each other, their intentions in terms of, let's say, lane changing, going into a rotary, in terms of potentially platooning with each other, going on an off-ramp or merging with traffic on an on-ramp. So this is actually critically important, being able to communicate with each other. Like up until now, vehicles, at a bare minimum, researchers have looked at from the perspective of if the vehicles just share with other vehicles their location, their speed, perhaps the direction that they're traveling in, and not much else, which is still quite a lot of information, being able to know the status and of each vehicle on the road that's near to a specific vehicle. So let's say my vehicle, knowing where all the other vehicles surrounding me are and in what direction they're moving and at what speed. This is helpful. But taking it up a notch and being able to now have these cars saying, oh, in the next 10 seconds, I'm going to be making this right turn such that I can go on that off-ramp in about a half mile. That would be phenomenal. Or let's say 10 or 15 cars ahead saying, I'm detecting deer up ahead, let's say using the vision system on the vehicle that identified the presence of the deer or herd of deer, and that could propagate back to vehicles behind that vehicle, let's say to me, saying, you better slow down, there's wildlife detected by the roadside and could potentially be a road hazard. This would actually be a huge game changer, whereas, you know, the technology now does not enable that.
Let me throw you a curveball here in regard to that, because that sounds great. But, you know, we're not suddenly going to have all the cars on the road self-driving and talking to each other. This is a gradual occurrence. And frankly, there's going to be a long learning curve for the public and a long period of time where there's still going to be human drivers. Maybe there always will be. I mean, I drive a sports car on the weekend. That's for fun. And if it self-drives, it's not so much fun. So what are going to be the challenges of these cars figuring out what's going on with the cars that are still driving conventionally if they're only interconnected to the self-driving cars on the road?
Well, that's a great question. And you're right. Like, you know, I cannot imagine a sports car being driven autonomously through, like, let's say the White Mountains in New Hampshire or some other sort of really great driving route. Like, you know, take a lot of fun out of it. But you're absolutely right. Like, what to do about sort of the interim over the next 10 years as we're, let's say, deploying self-driving cars on the road, there's going to be an awful lot of human-operated vehicles. And also, in addition to that, the connectivity aspect, right? So unlike a cell phone that you and me might have for 2, maybe 3 years, people don't necessarily throw away cars every 2 to 3 years. They usually keep them for about a decade or so. Or at least I do. I keep my cars until they're like in the ground. But that's just my personal choice. You know, it's kind of the, you know, saving money and all that. But you're absolutely right. There's going to be a time period where self-driving cars are going to be on the road with human-operated vehicles, and those self-driving cars are going to be of different manufacturers. They're going to have different levels of autonomy, and they're all going to have to coexist with each other. And I think that's where we're going to have to leverage the technology in order to be able to figure out where these human-operated vehicles are on the road. Now, this is kind of really important, because what's going to happen is we can leverage the sensing technologies of the autonomous vehicles, these self-driving cars, in order to detect all vehicles within its vicinity. And what could also happen in addition to that is the ability for those self-driving cars to sort of figure out, saying, is this an autonomous vehicle? Is this a human-operated vehicle? Is this a self-driving car that has wireless connectivity or does not have wireless connectivity? So it's going to have to do some sort of classification. Then, with a common language, that information can be shared amongst other self-driving cars that also follow that same language, right? So what you end up getting is, very importantly, the situational awareness of the environment around. And the sensing technology is great at what it's designed to do, to sense. And it will sense vehicles. And then on top of it, this wireless technology. So for instance, like looking at what we're doing right now with the IEEE Future Networks initiative with respect to enabling 5G and beyond, what it is leveraging is, you know, 5G technology and future networks technology in order to connect all those self-driving cars that have that ability to communicate with each other. So now they're getting, all those vehicles are aware of each other's existence, and they also start sharing information about what they're seeing, and they put together a map. And so they'll say, I'm picking up a vehicle. I can't talk with it. I'm not sure if it's autonomous or not, but it's right next to me. It's moving at this speed based on what I'm sensing. And I'm at this location, and it's just 2 to 3 meters to the left of me. Do you see that? And let's say another self-driving car is in another lane, maybe 20 meters ahead, and says, yeah, I'm picking up that vehicle as well. So using that sensing technology, we can kind of identify sort of those holes, if you will, in the traffic that is being detected by these self-driving cars to say, I think there's a car here, and here. They may or may not be autonomous, and they're definitely not connected, but we definitely see them on the road. And then they all share that information in order to sort of piece together this puzzle. So, and what I imagine will happen is that over the course of a decade, we're going to see fewer and fewer of these these human-operated vehicles, with the exception of maybe cars such as sports cars, perhaps motorcycles, and other platforms, which, you know, are still going to be manually driven by humans. But as a collective, these self-driving cars are going to be able to piece together that puzzle, which by itself, like without any wireless connectivity, is almost impossible to do. So that's sort of where I see it's all going. I think that language, a common language, will just really be able to sort of piece together this environment. Otherwise, and I love this term, and I think it's very accurate, what you'll end up having is sort of like a Tower of Babel scenario, where every car is just going to talk in its own language. No one's be able to cooperate with each other, and then that sort of overall big picture, that situational awareness of a stretch of road that could be a mile or two long, just goes out the window.
Okay, kind of sounds to me like what you were describing was sort of crowdsourcing defensive driving. One final quick question here, as our time is growing short. The big picture is commercial availability of level 4. You have any vision for how far away that is?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, there are a number of auto manufacturers that claim that by the end of this decade that the level 4 autonomy will be available on the road. Like, you know, so you can buy your own autonomous vehicle, your own self-driving car, and you can take it off the lot and be driving. Now, that would be wonderful, but I think there still needs to be a lot of work in order to make sure that this technology is safe. And I think there are a lot of states, and Massachusetts being one of them, in order to make absolutely sure that these cars are capable of driving on public roads and be able to safely interact with other vehicles, whether they're self-driving or not, as well as with the roadside infrastructure like stoplights, stop signs, and such. So in my opinion, I think it's still going to take some time. But I think we're really getting there. I think there's a lot of energy, a lot of investment by quite a few companies, by numerous engineers, by university researchers that are definitely making this technology a reality. I also think the impact of this technology is quite significant, not only for, let's say, the self-driving car enthusiast who wants to have the first one in the neighborhood, but I think the social implications too, like enabling people that might be handicapped, might be visually impaired, or otherwise unable to drive a vehicle at all, have the freedom of mobility, as well as enabling applications such as ride sharing on a very large scale and getting cars off the road in order to provide that same level of mobility 24 hours a day to populations that either don't have cars, can't afford cars, or just want to make the world a greener place. Although a lot of auto manufacturers are saying, you know, within this decade, conservatively speaking, I would say at the beginning of the next decade, in the early 2020s. But I wouldn't be surprised that prototype systems will be ready to hit the road by the end of this decade. But I think with some caution, I think this should be ready early in the next decade.
Alex, that's great stuff. There's so many more issues involving self-driving cars. We haven't gotten into the ethical stuff or the trolley problem or legalities, liabilities, etc. So perhaps we'll set that for another time and get you back on. But for now, thanks for joining me and best of luck with the Vehicular Technology Society.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mark. It's really a pleasure. Thank you for having me on today.
Indeed, interconnectivity is just one of many problems that will need to be solved if self-driving vehicles are to ever become the predominant mode of personal transportation. But for this podcaster, it's time to move on to an even more radical future driving technology. Part 2 of Future Driving will address flying cars with another IEEE engineer, Kaushik Rajashekara of the University of Houston. My thanks again to Alex Wiglinski and to you for joining me today. My technical assistant is Mohammed Marouf. Until next time, I'm Mark Sackler.